Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming man who infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
You know, there's nothing more cruel than kids in middle school. There's no creature on the planet worse than a kid in middle school.
It is a great training ground, and you will understand this for a television newsroom.
Absolutely.
Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
Good night and good luck.
Hey, folks, and welcome back to the Lincoln Project Podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today by Leland Vitter. You know him from News Nation. You knew him before from Fox, a longtime journalist, smart guy, a guy who connects with big stories and with folks, I think, in a way that is missing in a lot of our journalism today. But today's show isn't really about journalism per se or politics, as it often is. It's about Leland's new book, and it's called Born Lucky. A dedicated father, a grateful son, and my journey with autism. And you know, you and I are of a generation where they didn't call it autism when we were young. It was he's distracted, he's kinetic, he's what they found 100 different ways to say it without knowing what we were talking to. Tell us about your story about this and how you came to write this book, and why it's important. Because I think the point of it was, I read it in a sitting, by the way. The point of it to me seems like fitting in and finding your place in the world should not be because you're in one box. But tell us about your story, about how you came to write this.
That's a great takeaway. And thank you for the kind introduction. Look, it is my story, Born Lucky. But it really is not about me. It's about so many parents, just like my dad was, who feel alone. They feel helpless. Right. They feel hopeless. George Will wrote the foreword, and he said, this is proof of the mountain-moving power of parental love. And I don't think it'll come as any surprise to you. It's very hard to top George Will when it comes to writing.
Oh my God, yes.
Or describing something. So you finish the foreword, and then you go, okay, who's this guy who picked up with the rest of the 240 pages? But you think about 1986, you make a great point. Autism wasn't understood really at the time.
Right.
And my parents are told by my elementary school teacher, it's time to get lucky, which is my nickname, evaluated. No parent wants to hear that. What's wrong with my son? You know, my kid's great. Yeah, he's a little slow. He didn't talk till he was three. He doesn't have any friends. Can't really play with anybody. And kids, you know, run into him on the soccer field and he hits them and he yells all the time, which is all behavior that I have.
Why was it too hard for you to play with the boys?
Because I couldn't interact with them. I was like target number one, right? So they would throw balls at me.
They were mocking
me. They were pushing me around. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know how to have a conversation. I didn't know how to play or laugh.
Were you confused about this?
Terribly confused and hurt, but I didn't know how to fix it.
So they take me to this little psychology testing center. And we've all been in those like waiting rooms, sterile, you know, stale coffee kind of smell.
Sure.
They do the evaluation on me. They walk out and they say to my parents inside the little conference room with the, you know, vinyl chairs that are ripped, we don't really understand what's going on inside his head, meaning mine. And they had lots of terms for it, pervasive developmental disorder and delay and all these different things. autism back then was kids who were profoundly autistic. People who are now nonverbal and exhibit sort of the symptoms that you look at somebody and say, okay, that's the issue. But they say to my dad and my mom, it's difficult to understand what's going on through his head. Arrow number one, through my parents' heart. And then right. My dad says, okay, what can we do about it? And at the time, my dad was a very successful entrepreneur. He had built a couple companies. He had sold them. There wasn't a lot that he felt challenged by. And the woman goes, well, generally, there's nothing you can do. You just kind of have to meet him where he's at. And that was the second arrow through my dad's heart. And every parent now who wants the best for their child is going, what do I do? So he said, anything we can do. And she said, well, no, but if he's smart, which there were things in the testing that indicated that they felt I was intelligent, and he has to really want it. And the flip side of that was a four-year-old can't really want something. My dad had to explain to me why it was important to be more than what I was and to help change and to help learn social behavior, social interaction, help learn how to behave in a different way. And also help me through what would be a decade plus of horrible and relentless bullying, as you read about, and difficulty finding friends. So you asked why I wrote it, very long-winded answer to, because there's so many parents who are in the position my dad is right now. And my dad was saying, you know, do you think this book is going to do anything? Is anybody going to be interested in it? Who cares? And I said, Dad, if someone could have given you this book when I was diagnosed, and he goes, it would have meant the world to me. It would have changed my perspective. So that's your answer.
Right.
Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming Manny infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
And I think what's valuable about this, and again, it was an easy book to push through in a sitting, basically, because I was just, it's a story of showing you evolving into someone who could function in the world, where there's especially at that time, it was sort of viewed at the time like, this is the dead end, and you know, maybe he'll do something in some sort of supervised environment, was what a lot of parents heard about kids.
Yeah, I think still do. You know, I think there's so little known. You think about 40 years, we've figured out how people can live with AIDS. We've figured out how to treat and manage cancers. We've figured out how to replace joints. The number of kids with autism is going up every year. It was 1 in 1,000 when I was a kid. Now it's 1 in 36. Mm-hmm. And in terms of treatment options, there's still not a lot. And there's still very much this mentality of meet the kid where they're at. My kid's perfect.
Right.
And that's not the course that my dad took.
Right. So talk to us about how your dad set you on this path after this diagnosis, after this moment. Talk to us about the things he did with you as you were growing up. And you did write in there, and you mentioned it a moment ago, relentless bullying. You know, there's nothing more cruel than kids in middle school. There's no creature on the planet worse than a kid in middle school.
It is a great training ground, and you will understand this for a television newsroom.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So Yeah. So talk to us about how your dad helped lead you down in this, out of this sort of darkness that was described for you.
I'll give you where the darkness was and then how dad led me out, right? So I'm in fifth grade. It's very clear at that point that I'm sort of repellent, right? Some kids attract friends like magnets, others repel. I repelled because of my behavior. And my dad came over to the school one day. It's a little sort of private elementary school. He wants to see how I'm doing. He goes up to the PE fields where my class was in PE. He knew the guy who was the PE teacher because he was a football coach at another school. And he's standing there. So two big guys. My dad was a very gifted athlete. They're looking out over the PE fields. And my dad is there and he goes, "Hey, how's Lucky doing?" And Hoots, the coach, goes, "Well, I think he's doing better today." And my dad goes, "Oh, great. You know, let's go see him. Where is he? Who's he playing with? Where's what field he's on?" And Hoots goes, "I don't think that's a good idea." So they're looking down the fields. And Hoots goes, "Well, I have him over there. I put him with the girls because the boys just, he can't do it. I put him with the girls to protect him." So that's what my dad's dealing with. Few things for my dad. Number one, he said, "You didn't have any friends, so I thought I could be your friend." So he turned me into, at a very young age, kind of a mini adult, because he's the only one who would spend time with me. But he spent thousands of hours with me and talking to me and meeting and giving me an outlet for a friend. We had breakfast together every day. He took me to breakfast.
Wonderful.
In terms of really teaching me, first he had to explain to me, look, how you are acting is repellent. So for example, we would go out to a lunch. Let's say, you know, Rick, you and my dad are friends. He said, "You're going to come to lunch with Rick." And most parents would say, "You can't say anything." My dad didn't do that. He said, "We're going to all talk." And I could talk about politics and in issues of the day and business and stuff because he was the only one I talked to. So you would be talking about something in the day's news and I would interrupt you and ask you about what it was like in a green room. And my dad would just tap his watch. And that was my signal to do two things. One, stop talking. And two, to bookmark that moment. And then afterwards, it was like watching game film. Okay, so, you know, when Mr. Wilson was talking about, you know, what happened today in the news or what happened in the stock market today, why did you think he wanted to talk about what you wanted to talk about? And I go, "Gee, Dad, I don't know." And that became the beginning of the social blueprint. And I think the next part of it was Dad set he had no expectations, but he set very high goals. And he said to me, you know, if you want to be successful in life, you're going to have to change who you are, right? I'm not going to modify the world for you. I'm going to modify you to the world. He did that through a few different things. But, you know, when I was 8 years old, he had me doing 200 pushups a day, 5 days a week, because he said, "I want you to understand, you set a goal, 3 months you do these pushups, 5 days a week, and you get to go to Disney World with your mom." But as a little kid, it teaches you, I have to work hard for things and I have to put out effort. And that's the only way, whether it's effort in my job or effort in building friendships or effort in changing myself, that was always really important.
So, you know, your dad helps you build this framework. And as you go through your young life, you start to, you end up in the college phase of your life. Talk to us about like how that foundation helps you start to lead that more traditional pathway life. And even though you still had challenges to face in that period.
Sure. My dad told my mom, I was about 8 years old. They took us out to a dude ranch or something and all the kids start playing pickup soccer and I'm running into kids and I'm hitting kids and I'm screaming at them. My dad says, look, he's got 10 really hard years in front of him, was his line to my mom. This is going to be a rough road. So I get to college and I think that was the first moment I started realizing what my dad had said. And I think what you were alluding to about middle school, that the values and the currency that makes you popular in middle school is not the values and the currency for life. And I write right. in Born Lucky how that was his mantra over and over and over again. And for the first time in college, I was starting to see that.
Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming man who infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
There was this moment, and my dad had always told me about his time as a freshman in college being recruited or going through fraternity rush. And he was the only kid out of 600 kids who didn't get a bid. And he told me this story a dozen times and how that night he called his brother. He was all alone. He was the only kid without a bid for a fraternity. And his brother said, if you quit, they win. And that was something that stuck in my mind. So it's freshman year at Northwestern. I go rush for the fraternities. And the same thing happens to me.
Theta Chi?
So I became a Theta Chi, but before that, all the fraternities I had originally wanted to go to had said, you're not our guy. You're not our guy. You're a nice guy, but no. So I'm now standing outside at Northwestern, snowy night, all by myself. All the other guys have bids and are, you know, partying and everything else. And I called my dad and I said, you know, Dad, I said, yeah, I'm just like you. I didn't get a bid either. And I can still see myself standing on the street corner, you know, and you just have a phone, you know, that voice of somebody you love, your best friend. And I said, you know, Dad, you always told me it's not me. But I think I need to realize that it is. This is a decision people have made about me. And that was the first moment I think I realized all the things Dad was trying to teach me and how to really begin to change actually my behavior about people and how I interacted with people to fit in into
sure.
getting friends. And I think it's an important part because the book doesn't just apply to autism, right? Born Lucky isn't, you know, how to raise a kid with autism. It's about parents whose kids face all sorts of things. You know, find me a parent whose kid is like, hey, I'm doing great, everything's wonderful. And then every parent says that. It's very, very rarely true.
Very rarely. So you're at Northwestern and you discover you're interested in something, and that
right.
something is television.
Yeah.
So that was sort of your origin story here about how you got to where you are now, this phase of your life about discovering television. What was it that intrigued you about it and news in itself?
It's a great question. I think it goes back to what my dad and I always talk about. You know, he was my only friend, right? So by 5 or 6 years old, every morning he would take me to breakfast because the rest of the day he knew I really didn't have any interactions. They described it like I was going off to war, and then every night they'd have to put me back together. The beginning of it was just becoming really interested in politics. And the second part was, and this goes back to goals, I was kind of good at it, and I got an internship, and that became a thing that my dad just kept saying, okay, you know, what is the next goal? What is the next goal? And in my first internship, somebody said to me, hey, kid, you know, you're pretty good. You might end up at the network someday. And this is when, you know, Matt Lauer's flying around the world on the GE jet and Brokaw and Jennings are household names. And I thought, well, the network.
Golden age,
on,
man.
I looked on Google, yeah, back in the day. And I looked on Google, and the youngest anyone had ever been a network correspondent was 30. So I said, my goal is to be a network correspondent by 30. And that takeaway, and I think it applies to kids when they're 5 years old or when they're 15 or now when I'm 43, find something, find a goal, articulate it, and then go get it. And that was something that was taught to me at a very early age, as I told you.
So you had a brief flirtation with the CIA.
I did.
In my notes, but decided against that. But you ended up in your journalism career going into places that were of fairly high risk. Talk to us about how your career started in that regard, how places you got deployed to and the stories you covered in the early part of your career.
Well, Rick, I have to congratulate you on reading the entire book. So thank you. As you and I both know, that is rare of those who do these interviews. Yes. And I think this was, you know, you think about my parents and especially my dad, who looked after me and protected me. And he was the guy going to war for me every day in high school. And then all of a sudden I go off to real war. So the Egyptian Revolution, the Libyan Revolution.
Leland Vittert is in Cairo for us this evening. Leland?
Good evening, Shepard. The crowd behind me, 18 floors down, is chanting, "With our soul, our blood, we protect the Prophet." The Prophet being the Prophet Muhammad, and this crowd has certainly shed a lot of blood, and that is continuing tonight as there are volleys of tear gas and also rubber bullets coming out from the Egyptian military lines that are now surrounding the U.S. Embassy about two blocks from our position here. There is so much tear gas that's going up that oftentimes up on the balcony we are getting it. It's really making your eyes swell. If you can imagine the amount of anger and rage that it takes for these protesters to keep coming back again and again against these police lines, not only with rocks, but also with Molotov cocktails.
Leland Vittert watching it all from above.
And this is how raw of a person I was and how little I understood being a foreign correspondent. I went over to Israel to go find an apartment with my mom before I moved over there. And we get to the American Colony Hotel in East Jerusalem, which is this sort of beautiful kind of
old school
neutral territory. And we're out in the summer garden having a drink. And there's automatic weapons fire. I never heard automatic weapons fire. So I throw my mom on the ground and I sort of like cover her with my body. And I'm looking around and the gunfire's going off. And then I look around for a little bit longer and nobody else is on the ground. Everybody else is still drinking their Johnny Walker Black. Get my mom off the ground and the waiter comes over. He goes, "Everything okay?" And I said, "Yeah, gunfire, you know, gunfire, gunfire." And he goes, "Oh, no, celebration, gunfire in the air. Wedding, celebration."
Wedding.
Yeah. And that's when I realized I've got an awful lot to learn as this kid from the Midwest.
Sure.
Coming in the middle. So did that. And I think, you know, the lessons have come full circle. You never really realize when that did. And then as October 7th came around, sort of became the voice of, I think, moral clarity on our network.
Welcome to the Farrah Show on television. First tonight, heading into a trap and on their own. That's on point. Israel rightfully wants vengeance and justice and safety and to get their hostages back. But they can't quite figure out how to get those things. And increasingly, America appears unwilling to tighten the thumbscrews on Hamas's bosses in Iran. New pictures show Israeli tanks ready for a ground invasion of Gaza that should have started a few days ago. But if you look closely, only a few of the Merkava tanks have what are called cope cages. That's the wire mesh on top to protect against drone strikes on the turret. These are new. That's the weakest part of the tank. It's something Israel never thought of until this video came out from Hamas's attack last Saturday of them using drones to drop ordnance straight down on tanks. It's the latest indication that Israeli commanders have to rethink their entire battle plan for Gaza on the fly.
Joining me now, Leland Vittert, host of On Balance right here on News Nation, to talk about what's next and how negotiations will be affected moving forward. Leland, thanks for joining us on this Sunday.
Alex, good to be with you.
All right, let's talk about these hostages who were killed just 48 to 72 hours before the Israeli troops got to their bodies. What does that tell you about Hamas killing them as the Israeli Defense Forces closed in on their location, which begs the question, did Hamas ever have any intention of releasing these hostages alive?
It's a great question. You really never know what terrorist intentions are other than to kill and to sow the division and persecute this war against Israel that they have done now for a little more than 300 days. Hamas is a terrorist organization. Their benefactors in Iran continue to allow them to operate.
I say that as someone who spent years in Israel, Gaza, Egypt, Libya, and Jordan, covering the Middle East. But peace in the Middle East is a little bit like a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. We believe it exists. Nobody has found it yet. But we have to keep looking.
And I write in the book this story of interviewing a failed suicide bomber, which for obvious reasons, not many people do. And this was a woman who had, at a young age, had a horrific injury in Gaza. She had pulled boiling water over on her, little girl. Goes to Israel for health care for years. And she had a pass to get back and forth from Gaza to Israel when Gaza was closed. So she gets recruited by one of the suicide martyr groups, the Alaska Martyrs Brigade, and tries to blow herself up. And bomb doesn't go off, gets thrown in an Israeli prison, gets sent back to Gaza in the Gilad Shalit deal in, I think, 2012. Sure. And so I go to interview her thinking she's going to be this reformed person. And everything's going to change. And I show her the video. I was the first person to show her the video that the Israelis had of her trying to blow herself up. And she's watching the video and I'm watching her and she gets this big smile on her face. And it was just confusing to me. And I said, what are you thinking right now watching this? And she goes, that was the moment I tasted paradise. I wish I could do it again.
I brought with me the video of when you were going to blow yourself up when you were caught. How do you feel watching this now?
Ya Allah.
Hard to watch?
I'm very proud of this. I hope time will come and I will live again the moments in which I was tasting and smelling paradise.
In case you missed that, she was proud and she said she would blow herself up again given the chance. I asked why. She talked about how evil and awful the Israelis are.
And that sort of solidified my worldview, I think, of what the Middle East is.
It is that subculture of you know, that the phrase that was very prominent back in the day, you know, we love death more than you love life, is a
it was Golda Meir, right, who said, you know, there will be peace when the Arabs love their children more than they hate us.
More than they hate us, right? And they sort of held that.
Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming man who infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
You covered Libya. You covered the fall of Gaddafi, which is truly I think, sort of exemplary of evil can fall and be replaced by more things that are more chaotic.
Yep.
And end up producing just as much evil.
Right. I think it's also a great lesson in how things change, right? That you really never know the unintended consequences of one event. You know, the Egyptian Revolution then brought in the Muslim Brotherhood. This was going to be democracy coming to Egypt. Democracy voted in the Muslim Brotherhood.
Where there was fearless and victorious revolt. where there was jubilant hope.
People are celebrating the love for the country and wanting to change and wanting to become a better country.
Today, there is failure and fear.
For the first time in my life, I actually want to be out of Egypt.
10 years ago, Mona Seif and millions of Egyptians rewrote history in Tahrir, or Liberation Square. Liberated from the dictator they deposed. Liberated, they hoped, from the oppressive regime he led and the corruption and poverty it bred. Egypt was the Arab Spring's zenith. The momentum began in Tunisia and toppled dictators in Tunisia, Libya, Egypt, and Yemen. Today, Tunisia has a dysfunctional but durable democracy. But Libya and Yemen are mired in civil war. And Egypt, where the taste of spring was perhaps most sweet, the Arab winter is most bitter.
We were defeated. We tried to overthrow Mubarak's regime and deconstruct the machine that is Mubarak's machine. Its security, police, military, all of this.
Thousands of supporters of ousted President Mohamed Morsi rallied across the country. History teacher Saleh Ali Al-Najjar says they want to restore democratic rule.
We came from all over Egypt for one goal only, to return the democratically elected president to the palace.
Mr. Morsi, the country's first democratically elected leader, was forced out by the military after only a year in office. He and many senior members of the Muslim Brotherhood have been arrested, and the Brotherhood's TV station and newspaper have been shut down. Military leaders say they were acting on behalf of the nation and the thousands of anti-government protesters who still occupy Cairo's Tahrir Square. Anti-Morsi demonstrators like businessman Abdel Megoud Issa say they are frustrated with the struggling economy and Mr. Morsi's Islamist agenda.
The Brotherhoods are not going on the right track. They are our brothers, they are Egyptians, but they take it from the point of view of Islam. We don't want Islam here. We want economic reform.
Then there was another coup, so we're basically right back where we were with Mubarak, Syria.
With Sisi, right?
Yeah, with Syria is just this insane quagmire when everyone thought Assad leaving was going to be this great
back
thing.
Back in Syria, I was still trying to understand the ideology that draws young men from abroad to risk everything in this conflict.
What is your role in this revolution?
To fight in the path of Allah, to remove the Bashar regime, and to protect the Muslims. The recent revolutions, you know, their aims is to remove the oppression and, you know, hopefully bring, implement Islam and the Islamic justice. But then you find the West, they would say, is a threat to their superpower, because as you can see, the West and, you know, their choice of capitalism causes a lot of injustice. So if people see the light of Islam and the justice of Islam, that would cause the spread of it, and that's something they wouldn't want.
The thick fog meant the drive to the front line inside Syria was slow. We were about 40 miles from Raqqa, the headquarters of ISIS, but their fighters were just a few miles away, and no one wanted to make a wrong turn. Past deserted villages, we finally reached their line of defense. It wasn't much. One of the soldiers looked like he was barely into his teens. These are the Syrian rebels the U.S. is training and equipping. Until a few months ago, this whole area was controlled by ISIS.
Support for Bashar al-Assad had dwindled by the time a coalition led by the Islamist group HTS launched a new offensive in December 2024. The rebels put an end to the dictatorship within 11 days without encountering any significant resistance. The HTS was led by former al-Qaeda jihadist Abu Muhammad al-Jolani.
Alhamdulillah, ra'ayna bi umma ayyunna kayfa anna adhabat 13 aaman tata'afa min khilal hadha an-nasr al-'azim. Tarikh jadid ya akhwani yuktaf fil mantaqa bi asriha.
After just a few days, the country's national flags were changed from red, which was associated with Assad, to green, the color of the revolution. But across the country, infrastructure and institutions needed to be rebuilt. Syria had been bled dry during the 54 years the Assads ruled.
Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming Manny infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
I think the lesson I've taken from it, and I try to now have on my reporting on News Nation, you're nice enough to say that about sort of kind of how we try to do journalism at News Nation, is I try to just be the referee or the Al Michaels calling the game rather than having a side, because I've learned you really don't know how things are going to end up or what things you think are going to be, you know, have this effect, and it turns out they have a totally different effect later on.
You know, you do write in the book about sort of, you know, and in some ways you touch on like drinking pretty heavily sometimes when you were trying to not think about the things you were seeing.
Sure.
The pain and the trauma you were seeing
was
very real and very emotionally impactful to you.
Yeah. And I think part of probably being autistic played a role in that. Processing my emotions has never exactly been a strong suit of mine. And it's all the rage for kids to have therapy and go to therapy and do all that. My parents didn't do any of that. They didn't tell a single person about my diagnosis, which now is totally different. They didn't tell me about it until I was out of college.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to therapy on podcasts and national television, which is quite the experience. But yeah, when I was in the Middle East, I lost two friends, at the time, and was alone in the Middle East. And yeah, I started doing what most foreign correspondents do, which is, you know, you eat war for breakfast, lunch for lunch is refugees, and dinner you drink.
Radical jihadists are doing their own spinning now. Correspondent Leland Vittert has that story tonight from Cairo.
In Kabul, Afghanistan, rioters burned vehicles outside the U.S. Embassy as police held them back from the compound. In Pakistan, police blasted protesters with tear gas and water cannons, pushing them away from the embassy that was temporarily closed. In Beirut, the leader of Hezbollah made a rare public appearance to call for continued protests as his well-armed militiamen chanted back, "Death to America." The protests started Tuesday in Cairo, where thousands of hardline Islamists marched on the embassy and tore down the Stars and Stripes, apparently in reaction to an amateur YouTube clip insulting the Prophet Muhammad. Organizing the crowd was Muhammad al-Zawahiri, a convicted jihadist and brother of al-Qaeda leader Ayman al-Zawahiri. Today, the younger brother sat down with Fox News for an exclusive interview about the protests.
It has nothing to do with the September 11th, but insulting 1.5 billion of Muslims around the world and the Prophet Muhammad.
How can you call for a protest about a movie that you haven't seen?
I read about the movie. It's merely the title. It's refused by us. If the Egyptian people saw this movie, the protests would explode.
Zawahiri was released from an Egyptian prison this year and is now working to bring about an Islamic state in Egypt. He says the violence and protests will continue until the makers of the film are punished.
And in the Sharia court, if you insult the Prophet Muhammad, you're killed.
No. Correct. If they do not repent, we will execute them.
Hezbollah in Lebanon and the jihadists here in Egypt rarely see eye to eye. One is Shia Muslim, the other is Sunni Muslim. But this insult to the Prophet Muhammad could prove to be an explosive combination, uniting extremists on both parts of the Muslim faith, which would be very dangerous.
Leland Vittard, live early Tuesday morning.
And my mom called me one day and she said, you know, you're really drinking too much. And I replaced alcohol for a long time with exercise, which was
right.
Going back to that lesson from my dad in the very beginning. I think
to those push-ups.
Yeah, back to push-ups. I think that is such a underrated part of the story of how much that sort of foundation as a kid, both my dad pushing me in both doing push-ups and then later in rowing, and how so many parents now don't push their kids. It's like, we're going to meet every kid right. Where they're at. Just let them be them, support them. You know? And that was not the way that I was raised.
I think the era of gentle parenting, not just for kids on the spectrum, but broadly, I'm being a 61-year-old curmudgeon right now. I was raised by a dad whose philosophy was expectations, choices, and consequences. You want to achieve something, you will do the following things. If you do, you will get things. If you don't, you will not. And I do think there are a lot of parents who are like, well, little Sally is special and we're not going to do anything that would press out of the boundaries of her problem. And I think your father right. deserves a lot of credit for that, because he did understand before the science and before the research had caught up that teaching you all those abilities to construct the rule book of social interaction was important. But it's like you're in war zones where all the social interaction stuff gets rarefied down to the worst, you know, a lot of the worst aspects of humanity. It's just pure survival in all these places. How did you, I mean, I know people who are on the spectrum who have faced autism as a challenge, who are very good at structuring their lives, and that's how they manage things. But you're in a war zone. You're in a place like Libya where everything's falling apart. You're in a place like Egypt where everything's in chaos. How did you manage to keep your gyroscopes straight while you were in these places where it's really hard to have systems and hard to have structure?
It's a great question. I probably write as much in the book about the lessons that my dad taught me and how that followed through. And that just sort of came down to discipline. And I think you just said it yourself about expectations and consequences. With Dad, there wasn't a lot of consequences. I think there's one story in the book I write about where I was caught lying, which was the only mm-hmm. thing basically in life you couldn't do. There were expectations mm-hmm. in terms of achievements, or you're going to be a great student, or you're going to be a great athlete, but there were expectations about your character. That was a very bright line. And just how you conduct yourself. So I think, yeah, there's a flip side, right, is that if you've been bullied in the way that I was, right, go back to middle school, which is a lot like the Middle East as well. there was a day that that in front of the entire class, we're in like, you know, art class, right? There's all these paintings on the walls. I was terrible at art. And I, you know, was probably not behaving all that well, but I'm sitting there in art class and people are drawing or wherever, and I mouth off or something. And the teacher looked at me and he said, if my dog was as ugly as you, I'd shave its ass and make it walk backwards. So that's the teacher in front of the entire class. Yeah. And I walked home across the street that day, you know, head like this, just, you know, as a kid does when they've been humiliated. And my dad was waiting at the end of the driveway, as he did every day, because he said, I'm going to be there for you. You got to go to school, but I'm going to be there for you. And when I got back, he said, how was your day at school today? And I said, I was humiliated. It was awful. And he, you know, I was angry at him for making me go back to school. I wanted the teacher fired. My dad and I disagreed about that. And, you know, I would spend hours yelling at him every night. And I would get back up the next morning. He'd take me to breakfast and we'd try to talk about life. And then off I went to school. But I think that the expectations and the discipline of having been through that made it pretty easy to shut off your emotions, which may be, I think, what you're getting at.
Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming man who infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family, with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
So you had a long career at Fox, and then we will end up on the sort of present day storyline.
Okay.
You had a long career at Fox. You did a lot of stuff internationally. You were a well-known, well-regarded correspondent at Fox. And News Nation comes up as this opportunity, as a very different kind of network. Talk to us about how you came to News Nation, why it feels different. And I think it's gotten a lot of traction because it feels very different than a lot of the other broadcast and cable outlets. Tell us your News Nation story.
Well, the News Nation beginning and the Fox ending intersect, I think maybe what you're getting at a little bit. And it's the 2020 election, and it was very clear at Fox that I was no longer a favored son or child or whatever you want to call it. But I was sort of sidelined for a variety of reasons, but the new regime there had basically decided that they weren't fans of my work, which is fine. I mean, that's TV. And if you read the book, Born Lucky, if you're interested in these things, it sort of takes you through the inner workings of Fox News, which I'll spare.
Newsrooms have bullies.
Newsrooms have bullies, and they have favorites, and they have shifting alliances and everything else, which, again, middle school is great training for. And having to work through that middle school and understand it and see it's great training for. But long story short, I was anchoring the weekends at Fox after the 2020 elections, sitting there on the desk. It's during Trump's claims that he had won the election. The Stop the Steal rallies are happening on weekends. Right. And I have one of Trump's spokespeople on. And I just started doing what I always do, which is good journalism. And I think probably, sort of the way my mind works, I find people who aren't being fair arbiters of the truth offensive. And I think it's offensive to our viewers. And I started hammering this woman.
What do you want to have happen with those 700,000 votes? The ballots are already mixed in. Do you just
That's
want 700,000 votes deducted
on.
From Biden's total?
We
want to
make sure
total?
That conversation happens. You're trying to say this is done and over. The
I'm not. I'm,
say,
I'm not
done
saying
and
it's
over.
Done and over. I'm
but
asking you where you're going to find the votes
legal
to pull ahead. Where are the
legal
votes to pull
path
ahead?
Forward. This is now my third time to try to get this answer out. The legal path ahead exists here because there are clear constitutional violations that enhance. Keep snarking,
okay,
making
so
your faces
happens?
And rolling
Aaron,
your
Aaron,
eyes,
Aaron,
Leland.
Take me through.
I get it. I get
what
it. You guys spent
Aaron,
years trying to run up
question.
A Russia hoax against
it's
the president.
It's very simple.
And trying
what
to say
happens?
This is over.
How does the
and hypocrisy continues because you know what?
How
Hillary
does the
Clinton
president
said,
pull
don't
ahead?
Concede to Joe Biden.
What do you
want
to have happen to the 700,000 votes?
That this is over for us. It's ridiculous.
What do you
want
to have?
That is up
for
the court to decide, Leland.
Okay.
That is up for the court to decide. But we should be able to have the conversation about those votes when you're trying to say this is done and over.
No, nobody's trying to say that. I'm just simply asking you.
You guys keep voting president-elect. It sounds like you guys are certainly saying it's over.
I don't know who you guys are. Okay, you and I are having trying to have a conversation with you and
I'm
ask
Aaron
you.
I'm Aaron Perini.
I'm trying to ask you.
I work for the president of the United States.
I'm trying to ask you very simply. Where are you going to find the votes? You say we want to count every vote, conceivably because you think that means you're going to pull ahead. Where are the votes in a path to 270? Where?
We are taking every legal avenue that exists in these states to make sure that legal votes are counted and illegal votes are counted. Here's a question for you, Leland. For every Democrat and every talking head on the news, how much fraud is okay? How many dead people can vote and you're okay with that? How many ballots are run through a machine multiple times and you're okay with that? No, it's a serious question. We want to protect election integrity in the United States. And we said for months that we wanted to make sure every legal vote was counted and every illegal vote was not counted.
Who are you lumping everybody together with, Aaron?
The media?
The media in general? So now it's just you just attack everybody if they don't agree with you. Okay.
No, that's not what I'm doing. I'm laying out the facts here, and I'm sorry, Aaron, we understand where you want to go with this.
And we now know from the text messages and the emails that at that point, Lachlan Murdoch said to Suzanne Scott and I think Jay Wallace at the time, the president, he's done. Like, and it was told me, I didn't know that at the time. Basically, after that, it was explained to me, you're never going to anchor again here. Fine. And it was a little bit like private school. It was invited not to return. So it was made clear. I had a contract and it was made clear, like, sure. You're really not well, you know, you're, thank you very much. So News Nation had called, it was just starting. And the pitch was, we want you to do that kind of journalism. We want you to do it to both sides.
Right.
Because there's outlets that give one side a really hard time, outlets that give another side a really hard time. We want you to give both sides a hard time.
Sure.
And that was the pitch. And the two lines intersected, which was great, and started at News Nation in 2021. And I think you're really nice to acknowledge that. I think we're getting traction because there's a group of Americans who are radically centrist.
Absolutely.
And that so many people mistake being in the center for being boring and they don't care or apathy. And that's not it at all.
No, that vacuum of news in the center that confronts power left and right, that confronts power hot and cold, I think it's just something that the traditional networks, and CNN has such a weird internal culture. It never could figure it out. It doesn't know what it wants to be when it grows up, even though it's kind of the grandfather of all these networks. But I think you guys have a formula there that is appealing to folks. And as people look at, you know, why they always feel anxious on the left and the right, why they always feel, you know, outrage on the left and the right, they're being fed outrage bait on the left and the right. And it's not news.
It's a huge business in dividing us. There's an awful lot of money in making people angry.
Huge, huge amount of money in making people angry. Well, Leland, I just want to thank you so much, not only for coming on the show today, but for writing this book. What else do you want people to know about your journey, about, you know, how folks who today may have more tools, but are still, if their child ends up on the spectrum, they still have challenges. Even with more tools, it's still a challenge. What do you want people to take away from this book and that on that front?
Yeah, the real message of Born Lucky is that of hope for parents and for kids, and proof that you're not alone, and proof that you don't have to be defined by the diagnosis. Doesn't matter what the diagnosis is; it's your choice to let it define you. And if you're a parent, it's your choice to let it define your kid. Now, is my journey, my story, a prescription or a cure or anything like that? No, that's not what it's meant to be.
No.
But it's meant to say, and I think you picked up on it as well, that sort of in this moment of a reckoning in America on what parenting is, it's a story for parents to say you're not alone. And so many kids, whether it be because of autism or ADHD or anxiety or a physical disability, or just bullying at school and not getting along, there is hope. But I think it also says to parents, you know, there's a different way than just, you know, throwing your hands up and saying, Sally, Sally, and there you go.
Right.
Because if my parents had said, Lucky's lucky, they could have made life and, you know, they could have made the path, and every parent wants to do this, so easy for
you. Sure.
And then that doesn't necessarily end up well because you don't know how to operate in the real world.
That is a true story, my friend. Well, thank you, Leland Vitter. Folks, the book is Born Lucky. It is heartfelt. It will give you some feels. And I think it is is something where parents who face this challenge would really do well by it. But it's also just a good book about, you know, how you grow and how you become who you become. So Leland, thank you for coming on the LinkedIn Project podcast today. I really appreciate it. Best of luck to everything and good luck with the book.
Pleasure, Rick. Thank you.
The Lincoln Project podcast is a Lincoln Project production. Executive produced by Whitney Hayes, Ben Howe, and Joey Wartner-Cheney. Edited by Riley Main. Hey, folks, if you want to support the Lincoln Project's work against Donald Trump, Elon Musk, and this MAGA craziness, go to action.lincolnproject.us/helplp. If you'd like to get in touch or have suggestions for a guest or a show topic, or just want to say hi, our email is podcast@lincolnproject.us. For our MAGA friends, please, no more nudes. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again next time.
Good night, and good luck.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.